This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars Episode 68 was recorded on October 7th, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. All-Star Danielle DiMartino Booth is back with us today. This episode of Macro Voices is brought to you by TopTradersUnplugged.com, which happens to be my favorite podcast when it comes to quant and rules-based investing. Check them out. You'll be glad you did. Danielle, we had the jobs number out on Friday, caught a lot of people by surprise. Let's start with, I think the number is the number, but it's the interpretation where your expertise really comes into play. How should we interpret the jobs number from last Friday?
Well, there was definitely some good and some bad. We were all surprised here at Quill Intelligence about the decline in the unemployment report. And of course, that is what led every single interview and headline subsequent to the job report coming out, December 1969 low in the unemployment report. Wow, life is great. There was some definite good math about that. The labor force grew by 117,000. That's a little bit over half as much as the population grew. That left the participation rate unchanged. But unemployment fell by 275,000. And that is what took that 3.5% number down to where it was. But let's step back, if you will, and look at some of the internals of the payroll report. Let's look back at the past year and look at the complexion of the jobs. If you look to what we call high-paying jobs, those are jobs that pay better than eat, drink, and get sick sectors. We had an average of 76,000 jobs created in the 7 months through September. That number shouldn't sound very high to you, because it was a three-year low. It was also 56% of the 135,000 private sector jobs that had been created. Now, take that 76,000 and contrast it to the 125,000 high-paying jobs that we've seen created in the 19 months that preceded it, a much bigger number. And a lot of the reason, I think, and we've been talking about this, a lot of the reason that we've seen confidence among the highest third income earners in this country completely disconnect itself from middle income earners is because they're the ones on the front lines. They're the ones who are in charge of hiring and firing decisions. They occupy the C-suites. They're the CEOs and the CFOs. And they're highly aware of the fact that they're not recreating themselves, if you will. There aren't other high-paying jobs that are being created. What they're doing is, and we see this reflected in the unemployment rate, what they're doing is holding on for dear life to highly skilled employees. That's something we've seen for the entire recovery. For over 10 years now, we've seen that the lack of skilled labor has caused there to be a true stickiness, if you will, in the unemployment rate, which has kept it depressed. But that is not where our focus is going forward. Our focus going forward is in that top third of income earners, because they account, Eric, for over 50% of consumption. And I think we can all repeat it in our sleep that consumption is two-thirds of the U.S. economy. If they're not happy, if they're agitated by the ups and the downs in their own share prices, then they're not going to be very willing to make big hiring decisions while at the same time they hold on to the ones who don't make as much because they know how difficult it's been to replace them.
Danielle, I want to get your perspective on the demographics. When we talk about this job creation and so forth, jobs for who? Are we talking about jobs that are putting millennials and Generation Z to work? Are these jobs for a lot of baby boomers that are going back to work? What jobs are we talking about and where are the quality jobs going in this economy?
So, Eric, I'll give you a big bullseye on that, because we found that in the year through September, those who were aged 55 or higher have accounted for 47%, almost a half of the year's job gains. That's nearly twice their share of the workforce. By the same token, we found that workers aged 20 to 24, those are not the millennials who need to settle down. They accounted for 13% of the job gains for the past year through September, 40% more than their share of the workforce. But you get to that critical prime age workforce, that sweet spot between those aged 25 to 54, and we find out that at 64% of the workforce, they've just accounted for 37% of the gain. And yet we look back to housing data and we scratch our heads and we wonder why, if it's a home price north of $300,000, they're simply not available and or selling. Well, that has to do for the fact that there's this big deficit of those prime-aged workers in the workforce. And we've also seen a big run-up in the current, in the last 6 months or so, to those who are working more than one job, multiple job holders. Again, this is a sign of stress among those who we would prefer to not be saddled with student loans, and we would prefer for them to be making big down payments on homes, but we're just not seeing it. We've read stories and anecdotes about farmers in the Midwest getting second jobs to make their way, actually getting out and making deliveries as they sit there waiting on the subsidies to be delivered from Washington, D.C. We read about the quote-unquote bloodbath in trucking, and we've seen that the August revision showed that there were even more truckers who lost their jobs than we thought before, and that this has continued into September. I know it wasn't but a year ago that we were talking about the absence of truckers, and you couldn't get them for $125,000 a year, and you had to sign big bonuses in order to bring them onto the payrolls. That situation is completely flipped as companies have become much more aware of how tariffs are going and the trade war is going to impact their bottom line, even as we head into this third quarter earnings season, which nobody's expecting anything great out of. And yet we see the stock market where it is, levitating based purely on margins and margins alone.
Danielle, help me understand this phenomenon with the over 55 workers taking up such a disproportionate amount of the jobs. Because what I remember from my days running a software company was people over 55 just lamenting at how impossible it was to be taken seriously. Because unfortunately, for right or for wrong, the prejudice that exists in the business environment is, look, the guy who's 55 is kind of over the hill. He's probably not interested in learning new skills, the skills that he has are probably outdated. We don't want somebody like that starting in our company at that age. We want young, hungry, you know, on the way up 30-year-olds. And people who were over 50, and particularly over 55, described it as almost impossible to get a job. Now, that was late 90s. What is it that's changed that these people are getting most of the jobs? I don't understand.
Well, I think it comes down to a matter of the will to work. And I think a lot of these baby boomers who would otherwise prefer to be going into retirement have much more in the way of a work ethic. I think that there has been a shift in the way managers approach them. I don't think there's near as much pity factor, as you will, as there was before. And they're willing to work for less. And that's really critical when we're seeing margins being pressured as much as we are. So I think that there has been a shift in how employers perceive those who are 55 and older. And again, they need to work. They're sitting on more home and more mortgage than they should be shouldering at their age. And managers simply don't have a choice. So nearly half of the year's job gains, twice their share of employment. I don't think that we can look past these things and whistle past the graveyard, if you will. I don't see that this trend is going to reverse, especially as we see a lot of this back and forth in the stock market. But I will tell you this much, the bond market is not buying it. There's no bid at all in terms of the bond market. It is not coming down as quietly as the VIX index on stock market volatility has been coming down.
Danielle, let's pick up on that topic of bond market volatility. When I had Harley Bassman, the inventor of the MOVE Index, on our flagship podcast a couple of weeks ago, he heard your interview and he said, you've got it spot on when you say that if there's going to be a crisis, it's going to happen in the bond market. That's what we need to think about. That's what we need to worry about. So I want to ask you to elaborate. What did you mean when you said, watch out, watch the bond market? What specifically should we be watching for? What is the scenario that you envision ultimately unfolding, and why is it going to be such a problem for financial markets?
Well, so interestingly enough, I had taken my eye off of the MOVE Index for a few days at most, and it was brought to my attention that the triple C, that's the layer of credit ratings in the high yield bond market, that triple C spreads were not behaving nearly as well as the rest of the higher rated bond, high yield bond market, junk bond market, that they refused to come in, that their spreads were staying stubbornly wide. And I said, well, surely that's got to be reflected in the MOVE Index. So I shift my focus over to the MOVE Index, and you find that in the very recent past, it's jumped 16% to 89.4. So it's on the cusp of 90, if you will. Let me give you a little bit of perspective. The MOVE Index hit a three-year high of 92 just on August the 23rd. So just a few months back, the MOVE Index was way up there. And what that is telling me, if you combine the message in the triple C's, if you combine that with the MOVE Index, that is telling us that the bond market is on high alert for there to be some sort of a credit event. Now, we saw with the WeWork IPO being pulled, and we saw that their bonds started trading in a very sloppy way over the past few trading days, how much investors are going to punish any bond that is not considered to be worthy of its credit rating. But that's not so much the point. The point is we're starting to see in the MOVE Index the fact that credit rating agencies that have had it wrong for years now are going to have to start to play catch up. We've seen S&P come out and say, wait a minute, we're going to be doing a lot more. We're going to be doing a lot more downgrading than we had anticipated before. We're seeing Fitch in the next few days bring up its default forecast for the next 12 months. So while we're seeing a lot of outward calm, at least as advertised in the VIX index, we're certainly not seeing the same thing in the MOVE Index. And I will tell you this much. And this is going to be on a feather that's going to be featured for your listeners today. What we're following very closely to tie it back to the most recent payroll report is that the share of industries with contracting payrolls, so call that bad breath, if you will, B-R-E-A-D-T-H, the share of industries with contracting payrolls is approaching the 50% line. At the same time, we see the MOVE Index inching towards the 100 line. The last time we saw these two separate metrics break out to the upside, we were actually in recession. This takes us past the messiness and the ugliness that we saw in the 2015-2016 industrial recession. And that's why I call it the double Rubicon. We're at risk of crossing the double Rubicon for this entire current expansion. And I think it goes back to the concerns and the worries that were all over the place before we saw that really low unemployment rate. I'm talking about the market services index. I'm talking about the ISM, non-manufacturing employment index. The market one cruised south of 50, so it went into contraction. At 50.4, the services employment index is on the cusp of contracting. And this, of course, followed a very, very ugly ISM manufacturing report, which we'd anticipated, but we're hoping would not stay in recession. This is no longer a case of an industrial recession. We have seen hard evidence of the services employment sector, which employs, I will remind you, 4 out of 5 Americans, starting to dive into contraction. These are not the things we want to see, but it also helps explain why the conference board, which queries CEOs on their level of confidence specific to services CEOs, why that is at the lowest level since the last recession. We have an abundance of information and soft data, if you will, that is disagreeing with the hard data that have been coming out. And I think that that's why it's going to be so critical in this earnings season to listen to what the executives have to say about what they're seeing going out. I think we're going to hear not just news about how the trade war and tariffs are affecting the entire U.S. economy, but I think we're going to be hearing CEOs and CFOs on conference calls talk about looking to pare back their employment roles. And that is definitely a new twist in the current slowdown that we're seeing, one that we never did see in 2015 and 2016.
Danielle, I think you make an excellent point that even as industries are growing, if there's shrinking breadth, that requires attention. I know that's a fairly nuanced point that we probably requires a little bit more time than we have here. We're going to provide our listeners with a sample of your Daily Feather newsletter. Listeners, you can find the download link in the description of today's interview on our homepage at macrovoices.com. Danielle, just give them a quick indication of what they can expect to find there and an overview of this topic and tell them what they can expect.
So Eric, as you're pointing out, this is a very nuanced subject, but I think that at turning points and cycles, when we're at an inflection point, we need to pay very close attention to what some of the underlying data are communicating to us. To that end, again, the percentage of industries with contracting payrolls hit 46% in September. Step back. Over the prior 8 months, we saw an average of 35% of industries contracting. So clearly, there is a spreading of the damage, if you will. Clearly, there are a higher percentage of U.S. companies that are saying, you know what, I'm not going to take the current administration at its word. I no longer believe this is the best economy ever. And the best we can say right now is that things are as bad as they were in 2015, 2016. But combine it, as I said, with credit market volatility, and you see that this cycle is definitely at an inflection point. We've got it all mapped out for you. I think these are things that you should pay close attention to. We only have a jobs report once a month. So for us to sit back and cool our heels and say, well, we'll just wait and see what the October payroll report has to say, I don't think that's wise. I think you should follow Treasury market volatility. You should follow the MOVE index if you've got a Bloomberg terminal, because that is moving on a day-to-day basis and it's moving very quickly. And for all we know, because we don't know, I look at Twitter. There are all kinds of theories running around out there about what overnight liquidity strains are communicating. Well, if you want to know that they're communicating something very loud and clear, watch for any bleedage into credit. Because if overnight liquidity is beginning to reflect something more sinister, and that would be credit market volatility, then you really need to pay attention to the day-to-day moves in the MOVE index. We go into that in the feather that you're going to be provided.
And again, listeners, you'll find the download link in the description of today's interview on our homepage at macrovoices.com. Danielle, I can't thank you enough for another fantastic interview. We're going to have to leave it there in the interest of time, but we look forward to getting you back on the program for another update in a couple of weeks. This episode was made possible by toptradersunplugged.com, my favorite podcast when it comes to quant and rules-based investing. And remember to head over and listen to my conversation with its host, Niels Kastrup Larsen, which we released on September 7th, 2019. To get the slide deck that Niels shared, head over to toptradersunplugged.com/macroslides. And as a listener of my show, you're also able to get a free copy of Niels' latest book just by going to toptradersunplugged.com/macro. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly research roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.